Well, I didn't expect so many people, but that's fantastic. I'm very excited to have been asked to speak to you because I'm very passionate about the topic that I'm going to talk about, and so I'm honoured to be here. I've been 8.5 years in the public sector, 8.5 years at Fire and Rescue New South Wales, and before that I was in the private sector at Coca-Cola Amatil. And there's such a vast difference and also some similarities between the Coca-Cola Amatil, let's say, and Fire and Rescue. Obviously, one of the similarities is they both cart water around in red trucks. Fire and Rescue a bit quicker. But one of the big differences is that the public sector has a much bigger focus on records, on the rules around that, archiving and everything else, which I wasn't used to. But I do have to say, I wasn't going to talk about this, but I can't help it. In my heart, I'm an archivist, I'm a historian, I'm into family history, I've scanned everything in my house, I've digitised everything, all my videos, cassette tapes, slides, documents, so at heart, and some people who I've worked with who are here would attest that when I walk into, what was that? When I walk into the information management area, I have to contain myself so I don't start scanning things. So when I see a compactus, I feel the need to scan it. Anyway, I'll get back onto the topic. Now, I'm very fortunate to be part of a very innovative and energised IT department. They have the same can-do attitude that firefighters have. They'll go into a burning house to pull you out. And the IT people at Fire and Rescue will do whatever it takes to create better systems because they know that that leads to a safer community. And we have a saying, better systems, safer communities. And so they work very, very hard to improve their systems. And so we're always on the leading edge. There's always innovation because we feel the imperative to do things better. Now, I'm going to talk about a number of things. They will seem unrelated, but they will come together later. Personal journey in the last few years, as have many of my colleagues, it's almost like things have been revealed. We've had a series of light bulb moments, and it's been extremely fascinating and very enjoyable as we start getting glimpses of what the future will look like. And as we see that future and how wonderful it is, we have that real desire to basically take a shortcut and go there right now. And what I'm going to talk to you about is I think where we are going to take a bit of a shortcut and go to where a lot of organisations, particularly in government, are, maybe in 7 or 10 years' time. And I'll give you a glimpse of that. So the first thing I'm going to talk about is our Deputy Commissioner some years ago asked for an iPhone. He was the first person to ask for one. And the only reason was because the commissioner at another agency had one already and there's some sort of competition going on there. So we got him one. And the big revelation there, the light bulb moment, was that when we gave it to him, we added absolutely no value at all. He could have just gone out and bought it because there's no standard operating environment. He could load whatever he wanted. All we did was cause a delay and it cost us money to procure it. And that was a big eye-opener. And then we realised, well, gee, everyone's bringing these to work and people want to start using it and they all want smartphones and smart this and iPads and everything else. So then we decided, well, bring your own device must be the way of the future. So then we started trying to wrap our mind around that and all the legal and financial and tax issues and everything else. But then we realised that we would have to have a team of about 50 people out the back trying to support all these different devices and getting all our applications to always work on the next thing that whoever it is brings out tomorrow, and there's something new coming out all the time. So we knew that wasn't going to work, but all these companies were coming through my door saying, hey, here's some MDM, mobile device management software that you will need to continue to manage these devices. And as IT generally does, for decades they've been managing everything. As you would know, they lock down your PCs so you can't do stuff. They control it, they give you profiles, they load you up with all this stuff. That's why your PC takes 5 minutes to boot on a Monday morning. All that stuff. And I realised that this was just going to cost a fortune and I still need all these people out the back managing it. It can't be the future. So I said, no, stop it. We're not going to manage these devices. We have to reverse engineer this. Let's start with the premise that the device is not under our control. And engineer the processes backwards so that we have adequate security and things work properly. But then, oh my goodness, who are those people? They're contractors. Hey, oh, they're using their own phone. They're using their own laptop. How come they're working okay? Hang on, I did work at home yesterday on my Mac, on my own internet service. I was working really well, in fact, better than usual, because no one was bothering me. How was that happening? So why can't staff do the same? And then we realised, oh my goodness, this is how it has to be. We need to be device agnostic. For this to work, we need to be able to have people bring any device, and it needs to be able to work, and we cannot manage it. So what we've done at Fire and Rescue is, the only thing we do is there's a software called ActiveSync, which is free, basically runs on everything, comes with most devices, and all that does is insist on a password or a PIN number on your phone or your iPad or whatever. So if you lose it, people can't get in there and access your mail and put something in the Daily Telegraph. Is that, no, it still works? So that is the only thing we do. It costs nothing and it takes no effort. And we think that that protects the information adequately on devices. So, where we're getting to. Here's a non-government issue laptop. That means it runs really fast, is nice and thin and light. it's solid state. It is lovely. It's as thin as a MacBook Air. And what has to happen, and I'll just take that off, you need to be able to go down to JB Hi-Fi right now or some shop like that. You need to be able to buy this. You need to come back into the office if you like. You need to be able to open it up. You need to be able to connect. Straight away, it's on. What do you know? You need to be able to connect to the Wi-Fi with the password you were given. You open up the browser. You type in your credentials. And then the device at the back end will go, no, you don't have antivirus. You can't come in. Click here to get antivirus. I click here, loads antivirus, I'm in. Then I am presented with a portal full of web applications which I can use to do my work. So I go into my email, which I'll talk about later, and the cloud says, hey, Richard, you're entitled to Office Professional 2013. Do you want to load it? Oh, sure. I click there, it loads. Now my machine is ready. I just need Office 2013, I need antivirus, and I need a web browser. That's all I need to do my work. No standard operating environment. Comes on in 2 seconds. Opens apps in less than 1 second. Works anywhere. As long as I've got Wi-Fi. If I don't have Wi-Fi, I'll tether it to my phone. And a lot of the ones that we're providing actually have a SIM card built in anyway. That's where we're heading with that. Cool. So let me talk about the next thing. And all these things will sort of come together at the end. The other big trend that we're moving towards is as a service. So we're all under the thumb, you know, the budgets are being cut, the staff numbers are being cut, the government still expects us to provide, you know, bigger and better service and higher quality service. Well, that's fine and dandy. But you can only work, you can work harder and smarter, but it reaches a point. But what we can do is we can leverage the scale of third-party organisations. Third-party organisations that already have the scale efficiencies, that already have the expertise. We need to be able to leverage these services. Now, in the old days, a lot of these things were not available elsewhere. That's why IT departments did it. I've been around so long, I still remember when my company that I worked for at the time actually wrote its own email system. Because you couldn't get it. There was no Microsoft or Google or anything else. But once these things were available, they killed that off and moved to a proper product. But what I'm seeing across government is the government keeps doing things that it doesn't have to do anymore. And a lot of things that we need to do our business are now productized. They're consumerized. They're available as a high-quality, mass-produced product that is not just adequate, it's actually better than what we're doing inside. I don't know about you, but I've got 3 daughters. And if they want to show a video or something off their phone, they just wirelessly project it onto the TV. It's just all too easy. If I go to work, after over 5 minutes of waiting for my machine to boot and then opening this and doing that and clunky, or just trying to get a PowerPoint to project, how hard can that be? We're still doing things that we should not be doing, and we need to stop doing it. We need to be able to get the cost savings and the quality from elsewhere. So Fire and Rescue is now getting its accounts receivable through Westpac. They're doing it. Our accounts payable, we're now getting just about, I think, in a week or two, getting all our invoices sent to a lockbox and scanned elsewhere and then matched and paid and all that sort of thing. Over the next few months, we're getting rid of all our corporate infrastructure, and we'll have IBM providing that as a service out of the government data centre, because they can do 24/7. They've got scale. They've got people there that can do that. Fire and rescue, if we do it in-house, we've got single points of failure with certain individuals. We can't do 24/7 as well as we should be able to. But IBM can in that respect. So the future is to get it from external organisations. And I think as time goes on, as the years move on, IT as we know it will morph to simply being a bunch, apart from business analysts, will morph into being a bunch of people who are brokering services on behalf of their client agencies. They'll be sourcing IT services, swapping them in and out depending on the price and the quality that is required. And so if you went in a time machine and came back in 10 years, I don't think you would find an IT department in small or medium-sized agencies or organisations as you know it today. And now, while we're on the subject, cloud email. So, very interesting. And I had a meeting before this about that, and there's still a number of unresolved issues around privacy, and it's got nothing to do with cloud email, just email generally. But I'll just talk to you about a few things, because we were on, up until a couple of years ago, on GroupWise. Anyone on GroupWise? Anyone still on GroupWise? Lotus Notes? No? Yeah, sorry. So we knew that GroupWise was the end of life. We had to get onto something else. And we've recognised that Microsoft Exchange is in 95% of large organisations across the Western world. So we kind of acknowledged that. But what I didn't want to do was put in a 20th century in-house exchange system, which would put us at the back of the pile, when I knew perfectly well that in 4 or 5 years, most organisations would have moved to a cloud email system. I would suggest that most people in this room already use a cloud email system, Hotmail, Gmail, all those sort of things, quite successfully, in fact, really well. Connects to your phones, connects to your computers, you can access it anywhere. You come to work and then you end up with something that's inaccessible on your computer, maybe at work or on a laptop that you've spent 10 minutes connecting with. So, but moving to a Microsoft cloud as an example, I saw as a big risk, because no other government agency in Australia had done it, or even in many other countries. And presumably because they believed that you could not put, that there were privacy issues and you weren't allowed to send records or emails out of the country. And so it was a big barrier. So what we did was I got a legal company to go and scour the federal and New South Wales government legislation, guidelines, anything I could find, because there was nothing specific about email. And they created a compliance register, and they compared the major cloud email providers against those things to see whether we were compliant. Because I didn't want to get into trouble, didn't want my CEO to get into trouble. As it turned out, Microsoft was the most compliant, and they were quite flexible on adjusting the contract to accommodate some of the things that I needed them to accommodate. So there's just one thing outstanding, and that was the New South Wales state records legislation that said that you weren't allowed to put your records outside the country. And I thought, well, that seriously sucks. What we have to do is change the legislation, clearly. So I started going down that path, but then I happened to come across a page on the state records website that said, well, actually, if you have an electronic record that is less than 30 years old and not of some sort of national significance, then you may place it outside the country. And I thought, you beauty. That's all I needed to move forward. Now, I also, just to be sure, and because I was an early adopter, I put a local archive in my data centre here. So every email that goes in or out of the Microsoft Office 365 cloud also goes into my archive. That all sounds pretty good. We did the project. It had a few bumps, as you would expect with any migration from one email system to another. But it wasn't too bad. And there's been a lot of spin-off benefits. But what actually happened was it turned out to not just be an IT project, it turned out to be a bit of a transformation project, and I'll tell you why. One of the senior managers said, hang on a sec, did you say you're storing every single email? Yeah. Well, what if an idiot sends me an email that I put like a crackpot and I delete it? Are you storing that? Because I don't want some historian going in 30 years' time pulling that out and writing a book about me and connecting that email to me. So there's an issue that we have yet to fully resolve. And my boss, Rosemary Milkins, she said, there's a huge GIPR problem. If you keep 20, 30, 40 years of email, most of which are not records, but are complete rubbish, personal emails and advertisements and everything else, if a GIPR request comes in and you do a search, you're going to pull out thousands of emails that some poor sucker's going to have to review. And that's a burden that we just cannot tolerate moving forward. So she said, I only want you to keep 3 months of email in the system, which will force people to put things they want to keep into TRIM. And I said, that's not going to work. I need to go back and refer to emails that are not records. I said, how about 10 years? She said, what about 6 months? And I said, well, what about 5 years or 3 years? Anyway, eventually we landed on 2 years. So despite the fact that the archive can store emails indefinitely for virtually no cost at all, and the fact that everybody's got a 50 gigabyte inbox, which is more than anybody's ever going to need, we only keep 2 years of email in the cloud. So what that's doing is it's trying to stop the email system being used as a de facto records management system, where people are locking away important organisational information that no one else can see. Or worse still, they leave the organisation and it leaves with them. So what it's also done is it's designated the email system as a temporal messaging system. Just like texting, voicemails, instant messaging. No one takes all their instant messages or voicemails and puts them in little folders or... So what it's doing is it's relegating the email system to be in that classification, not as a long-term storage medium. And that was a transformational piece, which we think, and I can't claim credit to that for that, but I think that is leading the way that others should follow. Now we're turning on the rest of the functionality of Office 365. One of those is a thing called OneDrive, which is a cloud drive, effectively, which means we can turn off our traditional server drives. And people can use those to collaborate, share files which are not records, or use it as a temporary scratch file, this kind of situation. And those files will be available wherever they are, because it's a cloud drive. And we can then you won't need to log in the morning through a Windows Active Directory to have your drives mapped so you can actually access your records from within the office. Cloud drive is far more convenient. And we get Yammer for collaboration, which has taken off like a rocket in the agency. We didn't even launch it. The darn cloud, once we signed up with Office 365, the cloud sent an email to all staff saying, hello, welcome to Yammer. Everyone's going, what the hell is this? And we're going, uh-oh. But then hundreds of people signed up and started actually sharing stuff. And it's really been very successful. So it's probably best that we don't launch those sort of things. And of course, share comes with SharePoint and other things, which could be potentially used as a veneer over Trim to help Trim be better adopted. So lots of things there. Now, the next thing I want to talk to you about, which kind of brings some of this together, which is a huge initiative for fire and rescue. And one of the things, how am I going? I'm good? We're calling it the Work Anywhere Initiative. That is, you should be able to work from anywhere. Now, we're moving to a new head office in the not-too-distant future, and that will be activity-based working, ABW. Who's in an ABW environment? Well, okay, well, in about 5 years' time, most people will be putting up their hand. So in an ABW environment, there's only 85% of the seats available for all the staff because it assumes that 15% are not there. And also, it's the closest thing it looks like is an airport lounge. So depending on the activity that you're about to do, you can sit in the lounge area, you can sit in a quiet area, you can sit in a collaborative area, you can sit in a small room. There's lots of different environments depending on the activity that you want to take up, but you don't have a dedicated desk, you do not have a dedicated office. So that implies a few things. First of all, you probably need to have a laptop, because when you go to meetings, you're going to have to take it with you, because you won't have any paper. You can't carry our compactors around with you, so you're going to have to have, we have to work to not having paper. So you won't print your meeting minutes, so you must have a laptop. So we've got a huge exercise going on at the moment to scan legacy documents, which is costing a fortune, but has to be done, or eliminating them. And we're also got a huge effort to stop generating more paper. So we're going to get our incoming Australia Post mail scanned. We're already getting all our invoices scanned. We've got to get everything else, stop the paper coming in the first place. And actually, there's a really interesting thing which I just can't help mentioning. In the old days, you had it, and I hate to say it, but there's probably some people in the room that still have it. Paper forms, you know, the ones that are printed by a printer that you actually fill out with a pen, and that you get someone to actually sign. Not that you can verify the signature at all, but anyway. And then someone came up with a bright idea years ago that you could actually print that, put the file on the server, and then someone can print it when they need it. That's a clever idea. Then someone thought, hang on a minute, we can scan that and store it electronically. And then someone thought, hang on, I can do better. Why don't we let them, like Adobe form or something, let them fill it out actually online, then print it. Or just fill it out online and email it around. Then someone else came up with an even better idea. Let's get rid of the form altogether, enter it into a system like SAP or something like that and use the workflow. But actually, there's an even better idea. Get rid of it altogether. Automate it away. Streamline the process. Or delegate better. And eliminate the need for approval. That's the ultimate goal. Don't have it at all. So we've got a number of projects focusing on eliminating the need to have the forms or even someone doing something wherever possible. And so, very exciting time. And now, one of the light bulb moments was, if you're going to work from anywhere, apart from having one of these or something else, you need to connect on a network. So presumably the only network that's everywhere is the internet. It's at your house, it's probably wherever you end up going, you can find the internet. So we are going to, we're just working out at the moment on coming up with a solution that is 100% secure, probably more secure than what we've got now. And in September we're rolling out Wi-Fi that will allow anyone to connect their own device to the internet, and we're moving towards that being the standard. In other words, the way you would log in from home is the way that you would log in the office. You would log into a web portal and you'd go from there. Oh my goodness, well hang on, if I'm doing that in the office the same way as I'm doing it at home and anywhere else, then what's the corporate network for? Hang on, I don't need a corporate network. How much do we spend on a corporate network? Sorry, how many millions is that? So what happens is we're finding that we don't need a corporate network. If we can eliminate that, we can save 70% of our data telecommunication costs. That's a serious amount of money. If the whole government did that, can you imagine how many hundreds of millions of dollars that would save? It'd be amazing. And guess what? You can get internet from any number of providers. So we have 400 offices or fire stations around the state. There's lots of competition. So in that town I could get it from TPG. That town I could get it from Telstra. That town I could get it from Optus. If they've got a cable going past, they can give me 100 megabits per second, I'll take it. Thank you very much. So for a fraction of the cost, in some cases we'll increase the network connectivity speed by 50-fold. I mean, a big revelation came when Filipino lady, well, from Philippines, at Optus, when I was talking to them about something else, told me that there was a new plan that I could go on, that I could get 100 megabits per second, unlimited internet for $115. Oh, and free phone calls to 25 countries. And I said, I'll take it. But then why am I paying $1,600 a month to Telstra for a 2 megabit link to that office over there? Are we out of our mind? So it's been a bit of a revelation, light bulb moment. We need to change the way we're doing it. Not just renegotiate the contract, do it different. And there's huge rewards. So that's what's going on, and of course we're getting very close to moving all of our systems to being web-based, which means you're not beholden to always have a Windows machine that you have to install a FAT application on. So at the moment, Trim, the version we have, uses a FAT app. We need to be looking at the later versions. I know HP's rewritten it. We need to start using web-based versions or apps that can be loaded onto tablets or phones. We do not want to be beholden to any particular piece of hardware or operating system. That example that I gave, if we could go down the road and buy that and just go through that process, would work if you had a Mac, it would work if you had a tablet. It doesn't really matter. And why should I care? As long as the staff can do their work with whatever they're comfortable with, whatever they're familiar with, that's where we want to go. So now I'm just going to bring all this together. I think I've come to the end. So just to summarise, we're going to move to a world where the unmanaged end-user device is standard, where the internet is the network, and where people can use whatever they see fit. We will help them to salary package these devices. We will help them, encourage them to claim a tax deduction if they're using it for work. That effectively means the feds are paying for part of their device. That helps. So we're better off, people are better off. Won't people be better off if they've only got one phone in their pocket rather than a private phone and a work phone? Because that's 200% of a phone. So we're deduplicating the world. We're doing it smarter. Now, the only question is, why are we not embracing this world faster? If we can see this, and what's worse, people are doing it at home, why are IT departments not doing it here in government? Is it because they're scared about losing their own job? Is it because they're stuck in their own way? I'm not sure. Maybe not everybody can come on the journey. Or maybe people are still coming on the journey and their eyes are being opened. I hope that is the case. And we need to help people open their eyes to new ways of doing things. But I just want to end on a bit of a... I can do a little bit of extra? I just want to end on a little bit of a story to really bring into sharp relief how archaic and crazy things are today compared to what they will be in 10 years' time. So let's say it's 20 years in the future, and I'm walking through the park with my granddaughter, and she says, Granddad, I need to do a school assignment on technology in the early part of the century. And my mum says that you were involved with technology. And I need you to tell me, you know, what it was like. I said, well, that's fine. Well, why don't we find a quiet place? There's a library here. Why don't we go into the library and we'll sit down and have a chat about it. So we walk in and she says, wow, what's that? And I said, that, my dear, is the Encyclopedia Britannica. She said, wow, someone's printed it all out. So anyway, because to her it is like bizarre. She'd be used to just bringing up something and doing a keyword search. The idea of actually having to find it in a book. Anyway, so we sit down and we have a chat, and she says, "Well, Granddad, tell me what a typical day was." And I said, "Well, I'd get up in the morning and I'd go to work," and then she said, "What do you mean go to work?" I said, "I go to the office." The office. Well, I'd go to a building in the city, actually. She'd say, why? Because that's where I had to do my work. Why'd you have to go there to do your work? Well, because people in those days, there's this thing called flex time or something. People cared more about how many hours I sat in a chair than what I actually did. Right, I'll write that down, but I don't get it. Okay. So did you spend an hour going each way from your house to this house? Yes. Okay, right. So what happened when you got there? Well, I went into my office, into a room. She said, well, what's in the room? Well, a desk with a phone and all that. A desk with a phone. What does that mean? Well, when people need to call me, they call me on that phone. Okay, so how would I know that you were there when I was calling you? I'd say, well, you wouldn't. So why wouldn't I just call you? I don't know, that's just how it was. Just accept it. I know it's bizarre, but that's how it was. So, and then I won't bore you with it, but I have to explain why we had a telephone exchange in the building called a PABX. why I ran my own Gmail system, which we used to call the email system, why I had my own internet that I managed, which we called the corporate network. And she'd just be writing all this down, but she wouldn't understand what is going on. And another bizarre example would be if your washing machine broke down and the washing machine repair person turned up at the door and said, I'm here, where are my tools? Well, I guess they're in your van. But what if this repair person was actually asking, like, give me the tools so I can fix your washing machine? You would consider that bizarre. And yet most of us turn up at work and expect tools to be provided for us. Don't you think, when you really think about that, don't you find that bizarre? So what I see the future is not only being able to work from anywhere, but there's a much bigger future. And you're seeing it happening with the Public Service Commission reforms. You're just feeling bits of it, where the notion of an employee, imagine trying to explain to my granddaughter, an employee is, it's a bit like a servant, a bit like being part of a family, not a slave. She'd be going, I don't know what you're talking about. Because in her day, everyone is a service provider. You're paid to provide an outcome, a service. And it's natural that when someone provides a service, they're going to bring their own tools. And so that's where we're heading. We want to encourage people to bring their own tools, and we need the infrastructure, the systems to enable that. And we need to, at the same time, deal with all the privacy, with all the security that is required to conduct our business. So I hope that gives you a feeling for where we're heading. Thank you.